This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
Hey, are we going to do an intro?
And Brock Rom.
Did we just start the podcast?
Jeff Honnell is the director of video post-production at Auburn. He has a wild backstory, and you might be able to tell that he has quite the unbridled enthusiasm for creative content and storytelling. Jeff joins us because he shares the same passion for giving back to the sports community as we do. Hope you enjoy this one.
Let's clap at five. Silence.
Giddy up.
Oh, you said the thing after the clap now.
What?
You said giddy up.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack, so if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Somebody who doesn't need a ton of introduction to our community, Jeff Hanel, is joining us today. I know a lot of people enjoy your work. They watch you on your Twitch channel, so Jeff, thanks for joining us. You have an interesting background, and I say this to a lot of our guests because I think we only bring on guests who have interesting backgrounds because that's what makes the podcast fun. But yours,
good job, us.
Yours kind of vibes with me a little bit more because you have a degree in music performance. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a degree in it, but I originally started in music performance. So why don't you go back to college?
Okay.
Back to the Western Australian Academy of Performing Arts. And 2004, and you are a music performance graduate. Mm-hmm. What's going through your mind, and how did you get into sports video production from there?
Well, this is a crazy story. I'll try to keep it short. I graduated. I decided I was going to do my master's in music performance at the University of Western Australia. Started it was way harder than, and it was, again, everything was very theory based. It was everything I dislike about the music industry. My mind and how I felt when I played music was always to perform, to give an emotion, to give an enjoyable experience, whether that's happy, sad, straight emotional, whatever, like anything that you play, like that's what music was intended, was to, you know, draw out an emotion. Well, all I ever did was theory and why I'm doing this part or this new music style to be so smart, to be smarter than anybody else ever has whenever they wrote a piece of music, but it wasn't anything enjoyable to listen to. You know, it was just people being smart, and it turned it into like, felt like math problems to me, which is not something that I enjoyed. And then at the time I was like, you know what, I'm gonna stop school. I'm gonna work with the symphony orchestra full time. I know I can work in the pit orchestra. I can do all this other stuff. It'll be fine. I've got a job that's worth having. So I just have to apply for it through, Australia to be able to be on a permanent work visa. And I started to do that, and they were like, well, you don't fit all the criteria. I was like, oh, did I just make a mistake? And then evidently, as I was trying to do all that, they were like, well, your visa's run up for school because you're not in school. Well, you got to go. And my wife was still in school. She still had another 8 months. She had a whole nother semester and a little bit to finish her degree. Well, they said, pack your bag, Skippy, and get out. So I had to leave the country and leave my fiance at the time in Australia. I went to Arizona State University to finish my master's. And I was there until she got back. Also, again, just I completely fell out of the love of performing because it just wasn't the same anymore. And then she gets in, we're here. And then a buddy of mine, Hurricane Katrina happens. A buddy of mine's in New Orleans, loses his whole business, gets flooded. He moves back to Natchitoches, which he was a friend of mine in Natchitoches when we were at Northwestern State together, where I actually met my wife. So then we leave Arizona, go there, try to help them with their insurance business. Was not my thing. tried though, but then wound up running into another friend at a car dealership, which sold Mercedes, Volvos, Land Rovers, Jaguars. He was like, hey, we need another salesperson. I was like, sure. I love to do that, and wound up loving selling Volvos because I enjoyed the people. They came there because of safety. They came there because of their family, and it wasn't about a big star or the Jaguar or this big massive Land Rover, Range Rover thing that I've got. And I really love that side of it. And it connected with me in a lot of ways on my heartstrings. But at that same time, I went back to a homecoming game to my old school at Northwestern State with my wife. We went to the game. The video board wasn't even working. Like, it wasn't even on. Watched the whole game. Nothing was ever on the video board. Knew the athletic director when I was there before. He was still there. I wound up talking with him and Jason Horn, who was head of marketing at the time and associate athletic director. And I said, why isn't anything working? They were like, well, we don't have anybody to run it. I was like, huh. So I left, and I was probably maybe a week, and I decided I don't want to sell cars anymore. I want to know how to do stuff on a video board. No joke. Like, that's where it started. Quit my job. Went to Bossier Parish Community College for one semester for film, just so I could get my hands on equipment so I could figure out how to do some stuff. I think we made about $4,000 that year. My wife was selling timeshares at a Bass Pro Shop. That's how we made our income. We had our daughter, who was about a year old at the time, you know, and just decided, hey, I want to do this. And I sat down at an editing station at the Bossier Parish Community College and laid down my first tracks and audio in a way that I'd never done it before. And said, and it was on Adobe CS3. And I went, I'm going to do this the rest of my life. And literally went to the next game, talked to Jason Horn. I goes, hey, can I just do the board? Sure, if you can figure it out. Got on the phone, talked with Daktronics, figured out the V7000, figured out the Echolab switcher to be able to do everything, the Dilray Mies for replay, ran SDI cable all the way from the top of the stadium all the way down to the field for these old Canon cameras that we used and ran it all by myself and had a couple people. We talked on walkie talkies to be able to communicate to the cameras what I wanted them to do, and learned After Effects because of Andrew Kramer. I mean, Andrew Kramer was my best friend. I said I would never ever do After Effects in my whole life, and I pretty much only did that for a period of time. And again, I've only taken one picture ever in my life with someone that I consider famous, and that was Andrew Kramer 2 years ago when I was in LA. It was the coolest moment ever in my life, kind of, in this industry. I think now, there's a lot in between. There's a whole lot in between, right. But I just wanted to make it short.
No, I think you outlined what a lot of people see when they get into this industry is you dip your toe into it and you say to yourself, oh, I've got to do this.
Yes.
Right. And you find whatever means you can to do it. And, you know, necessity is a mother of innovation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you found innovative ways to get into the industry
without what ever going to school or doing the other things that most people had a chance. Even though I'm old, there never was that chance. That didn't exist.
Right. But I think it illustrates you don't need that chance to create the opportunity for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
When you were sitting there your first day, you're walking into a video board that didn't work the last two games. What's going through your mind, and what's that process last 2 years? There you go.
Yeah.
What's going through your mind, and what's that process like for you of, I'm not from this industry. How do I get this working? What was the first step you took?
Well, Jason Horn had actually, who was the associate athletic director and marketing for Northwestern State, had made a contact with Daktronics. So he's the one that gave me the name of Daktronics and said, here's the number that I found. So I literally just called the number and said, how do I turn the video board on? I'm not joking. And then it was just like, okay, Venus V7000, I don't know how to open it. Like, what does it do? Like, how do I bring in video files? Oh, it has to be a certain codec. Oh, well, crap. I really don't know much about codecs. Like, it was just like, there were so many things, you know, and then the camera, like, what? Hooking it up to an SDI, where it's like, oh, that's kind of like how you hook up a VCR, blah, 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 blah. You know, I'd shot with some tape. I'd shot with some film when I was a kid. So I'd splice some stuff together before, but it was never, you know, it was always just fun stuff. And, you know, then it just turned into like, wow, you can really do this stuff. And it just kind of, as it went, I just started figuring out, looking at tutorials. Again, there were very few and far between. You always have to, even today, this is why I do my Twitch channel, looking for tutorials for someone who works in sports, who does things in sports, who shoots in sports. How are you able to follow the ball? Do you manual focus? Do you, Do you autofocus? Do you use mirrorless? Do you use more cinema cameras? Are you shoulder mounted? Are you handheld? Like, are you gimbaled? Or like all this other stuff that people use, you don't know because there's nothing to find. And you got to look at Peter McKinnon or look at Neistat or whatever, like all these other dudes that kind of started a long time ago that are really popular now. People still watch them for certain things, but they help you kind of. They help you with some basics. They help you kind of understand, okay, oh, ISO, oh, that's what that, oh, shutter, oh, that's how you get the water to look like this or blah, 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 blah. You get to learn a little bit, but how does that reflect in sports where you're running and gunning at all times? You never have an opportunity to shoot it twice. So what's your skill set? Like, I mean, and a lot of times, and I think forever for all of us, we're continually learning and growing as we shoot on a daily basis and trying to do something new. Or you just go, man, I've lost some skills here. I just can't follow the ball like I used to, or like, you know, right now me, I'm having eye issues and staying in focus. Like some of those things are a little bit of an issue now that I always took for granted. Maybe I don't think I ever took it for granted. I just now really don't want it to go away. See, I told you I was going to just, hey, we're here. And I ended way over here.
It's beautiful. That's the joy of podcasting.
No, it's ADD. That's what it is.
Let's call it a little of both. But I think you touched on such an interesting thing there. You know, back in the day, you know, us four probably are, you know, a little advanced in age compared to what we're maybe seeing on this mm-hmm. Slack channel. And, you know, when we got into the industry, there just wasn't this community, you know, of people who you could talk to and ask about these things. And, you know, it's not like now where you can just, you know, Google anything, you can YouTube anything, like, oh, well, why the hell don't you just watch a tutorial on that on YouTube? Right. It's like, that didn't exist.
I know.
Like, if you had to find these things on your own, and it's so crazy to look back at that, and I don't think I appreciate now how easy it is to just find anything I want to find on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, I had to use a teleprompter the other day that I'd never used. And I literally just typed in the name of the teleprompter in YouTube. Boom, there was a dude showing me how to set it up. I was like, thank you. But, I mean, we've done so many things for so long, though, it's easy to pick it up and like, ah, I got it now. Cool, you know?
Can we dive into your Twitch channel a little bit? You touched on it there. I think it's, you know, what you're doing to provide some of that insight for people. I was talking to somebody who sent me a video, and I said, oh, there's some interlacing issues here. And they said, well, what's interlacing? And there comes a point when we all want to help, but we also have to understand, but the people who need help mm-hmm. Or need to understand something don't necessarily know what to ask for, or don't understand that maybe something needs to be deinterlaced or something like that because they don't understand why it's happening. So I'm just curious, when you get into your conversations on the Twitch channel, is there something that you've learned or picked up in working with students at Auburn that really has stood out to you that you feel would be helpful to share with the young professionals?
Well, I think I know why I love doing the Twitch channel, because it's live. And then especially when I start to edit, when someone sees something that I just do as a involuntary action, you know, like that's where I think all the greatness and the fun has happened. And I kind of wish I have not been editing nearly as much on the stream lately. It's been more conversational with a lot of things, having people on as guests, or, you know, trying to just keep it kind of light because there's so much negative going on and some other things of just literally just asking questions and helping people connect has turned into more of what I've been doing lately. But also showing other people's reels and giving pointers and some things that they could maybe want to do, or other, because sometimes they just start sending me stuff and I'm like, sure, this is great content to talk about. But when I edit, like, I think it was, I can't remember who the person was that was on stream. I showed how to collect all your media in Premiere Pro to where you can take it and make it into one. And then it was like delete all and delete unused clips, which was the other thing that like completely blew their mind. They're like, man, I have all these things on here that I don't, and I have to go through every folder to clean it up. I was like, no, just click on, I think it's edit. And then within the edit menu, there's delete unused clips. and it changes everything. Turn your computer off or turn the program off, turn it back on, and Premiere works like a charm. Because we all know that Premiere has issues, but so does Avid. So does everything has issues. And that's the thing. Like, none of it matters. Like, they're all great programs and they all suck at the same time. You know, but being able to go through it and just kind of show, here's what I do. And then I think I did another where I duplicated my audio track because I just held down the alt button and dragged it with my mouse, which was another thing I do all the time. And someone goes, how'd you do that again? I was like, how'd I do what? They're like, you just duplicated the clip. I was like, yeah, you just press alt, hold it with the mouse and drag it down. Which again, I'm a mouse guy. I would definitely, and that's another thing I try to tell everybody in the stream. Like, you don't need to edit like me, but you can take what you want out of what I do. Like, because I'm self-taught. So I live on the mouse and I have like 5 shortcuts that I actually use and that's it. Like, period. And there's so many friends of mine that I know in this industry that hardly ever even touch the mouse. I mean, they literally, and they can edit so much faster than I can. But there's a piece of what I do. Like, I like to tell stories, and I feel like if I speed myself up, I'm going to lose what it is of that tempo that I feel inside when I work, because I can't explain it, but I literally feel the edit as I click, as I do other things, like I feel it. And so that's something for someone else to do where I don't look. I used to always think it was luck that I could sit there and look at a piece of music. I see the waveform and I can cut it exactly where it needs to go before I ever even listen to it. I listened to it one time. Oh, that's going to be right there. Boom, drag, drop. Whoa, that edit was amazing. You know, I can't believe I did that on my own, but I've just done it so many times. You see it. It's 4 bars of 4. And this is where my music side comes in. I can see the 4 beats. It's 4 bars of 4. Here's where it's going to cut. Boom, 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 boom. Like, and that's why I think I know a lot of people I've met that are percussionists that do music videos of any kind are phenomenal. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, percussionists understand the beat. They can play off tempo as well. I mean, also, you got to look internally to yourself. Are you a person that likes to do the main beats on 2 and 4, or you do it on 1 and 3? Like, and sometimes when you
change, there's only one right answer though.
But is there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 1 and 3. Come on. No, I totally agree with you. I've always said that my background in music, and I've been a musician my entire life, has made me from a bad editor into a passable editor. I'll never say I'm a good editor. But I've said it a million times. I think audio is the most important part of video.
Amen.
And if you're lacking in that side, to me, and I think to a general audience member, it's very apparent. A general audience member might not know what's wrong with an edit. When it's audio, but they'll know something's not right, or right, it doesn't look natural, or it doesn't look smooth, or it's not cutting like something you would see on a big screen or on TV. And I think audio plays a big role in that.
And here's another thing with audio. Whenever I've had arguments with Twitter or people with Twitter and Instagram and whatever, where they talk about when you know, video without audio is what's king right now. Video without audio. I was like, I agree. Yes, that's true. People are watching videos without audio. But then when you watch that video take off, it's because they listen to the audio. You know, if your audio sucks, when they go, oh, that's pretty good. And then you turn it on, you're like, oh yeah, I'm out. Like, so
I think about like TikTok, like the biggest video in the world on TikTok is a guy drinking cranberry juice, riding his
to a song,
you know, his skateboard to a song, right? Like, TikTok's a platform, you know, where you can watch it without sound, but that video got big because of the sound.
And so every video on TikTok that goes big is usually to some track of music that's popular, that has something. It's always the music plus that. Now you also got the text and whatever it is that you got to do and the algorithms and blah, blah, blah. But great content with purposeful content, you know, purposely using things. I mean, even as an editor, you should watch your edits without the music after you've done it. Because if you're not watching it after you've created the whole thing, and then you go, oh, that doesn't make sense. Well, it's going to be the same thing for the person that's watching it on the other end. Like, if you did a bang on edit, you can tell that edit's good without the music. But again, the music is the thing that elevates it to why it makes it important. And you can't do it without it, because that edit would have never happened without the music. Just, I think you were saying before, like I always say, it's silent films weren't silent. Like, everything about a silent film was all about the music and how it flowed through everything that you did. And also, silence is an effect. people sometimes, like I struggle sometimes watching a music video of highlights and there's no Nat sounds.
Mm-hmm.
When you watch that video without any kind of, like, it doesn't have to have Nat sounds all the way through it, because the music can take care and elevate some moments. But man, Nat sounds of some kind of anything to be able to add that, like, adds that value to those things. You see the cleats hit the concrete. I want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, there's those things, those little bitty subtle things that you should be able to put in there that people just go, oh, yes, you know?
Well, and a lot of it comes down to intention, right? Mm-hmm. Like, silence intentionally can be very impactful, mm-hmm. right? But, I, you know.
Think of every movie you've ever watched.
Right, exactly. And to me, it comes down to, we had Jodie Massad, who's a fantastic editor, storyteller on the podcast before, you know, and he always talked to me about editing with intention, right? Mm-hmm. Everything you do should have some sort of motivation or intention that goes with the piece. And I think you're outlining it right there. Of, you know, I used to be like, I'll just throw this in. This is what they do in movies. Get it done quick. Like, there should be a bass drop here. I used to be a huge, like, just put a bass drop, you know, wherever you needed an impact or something, you know. But it's like, if you save that bass drop for a moment where it motivationally makes the most sense in the piece, it has a lot more impact than me just putting a bass drop every time somebody hits somebody, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, that's very, very simplistic view of it. But, you know, I think it's important, and it can be tedious at times, but I think mm-hmm. editing is tedious to get things right, of thinking about every single edit and cut and sound effect you put in, and swell and lull in the music, and understanding what the intention is behind that and what you want to convey to the audience.
Yeah, that's my biggest struggle right now in editing, because I can tell you why I put every single clip down. Like, I can walk right through it. Every edit I've ever done, I can tell you why I put the clip there and why it led to this. And I knew when I wanted to build to this, and then I wanted to take it all away, and then I want to kind of bring it back again, because it's all storytelling. Even if you're making a 30-second piece, you can still tell a story in 30 seconds, you know? And I try to tell that to the students that we have, and anybody else that in on the Twitch channel as well, as we were talking about before. It's so important to allow yourself to spend the time, even though we're in a job, in a business that really never gives you time. But there are things that you can learn on your own of what you are good at. So if you know that, okay, how I tell a story, I'm always going to put an establishing shot. And one of the things I think has been made very important, or to myself when I make videos, is the feet shot. Like, I love the walking feet shot. Like, everybody sees it. And everybody makes fun of it at times that I do it a lot, but I do, because walking feet forward is leading. Well, I'm leading them to the next thing, and it's where you're going. It's where we are all going. And for me, that is a setup that allows a true story moment to happen within something very specific that's going on. Now, it's not always in there, but that's definitely a go-to. Like, you got to have your go-tos. You know, some people, you remember back in the day, it used to be the pan up at the stars or the moon, and then the pan down to the house, or the pan down to something that's there, to the location that's there. Like, everybody had their things that so many, I mean, I think Spielberg did that a ton in a bunch of his old movies, where it was always here to here, you know, but also Dutch angle stuff too, for things specifically, again, Spielberg, you know, if you want to add action, you know, you're here, you know, I want to see that great angle. You know, and then you want to be able to push in. And then when you push in, you get that nice natural push that everybody sees in the 4K, where you're over extreming it to make a full turn. And it's all still based on the same stuff, you know?
Yeah, we got to share the video clips of this stuff so that people get the full effect here, because I think they might miss out otherwise.
I told you, voice inflection helped.
Between Garrett's closet and all this is why this needs to be a video podcast.
Right? Yeah. Go important. Ahead. Just make your YouTube channel and just throw it on there.
Perfect.
Don't edit it, because it's way too long. Like, that's why I struggle. Like, I should be doing more with the Twitch channel and with my YouTube channel, and I don't, because it's impossible to do all that work and have a full-time job.
100%.
Yep.
100%.
We're just running into that. Like, when are we going to schedule to record? Oh, I don't know. We all have full-time jobs, and sports are back.
Big facts.
Yeah, it's interesting that you guys were talking about audio in that way. Even if it's a graphic that I know is not going to have audio on it, like in an arena, like we have a marquee board I was asked to do a graphic for, and I, I found music to put under it so that there was a rhythm to the graphic, because I felt like it needed something to be able to, that I could use to create that rhythm for it to still feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I know you're in post-production, Jeff. One of the things that I always harp on for people is keyboard shortcuts. And I don't think a lot of people realize that in Premiere, you can go in and create your own keyboard shortcut. Mm-hmm. So I started in Avid, and I actually brought in the Avid keyboard shortcuts and built on top of that and created my own. So I'm curious, since you said you do a lot of mouse clicking, is there something when you work with students at Auburn or something, just from being on your Twitch channel, that you think is helpful to people to share that you feel like is something that you harp on a little bit more?
Man, when it comes to technical stuff with me, like, I struggle. I'm the one person that everybody hates in post, because I hate to log my footage, because I shoot and I edit. It's like, I think somebody asked me one day, what would you rather do, be a shooter or an editor? I was like, both. And then they're like, no, you got to choose. I was like, okay, which one is logging? And they said, the shooter. I was like, okay, team editor, here we go. Cause I don't want to log anything, cause it takes, but again, don't take me wrong from what I'm saying though, because there is 100% necessity of that getting going. But I found for myself, I lose all creative ability once I get into the logging system of things, because I'm using a different part of my brain and I get stuck in that. So then I start working on my structure of my project, and I'm doing everything but the job I was supposed to do, which was my project. And I know that's who I am.
That's interesting, because I feel like when I go through logging process, it's almost like a way for me to prepare and know what I'm going to edit. So as I'm logging, I'm like, okay, this is going to go here, this is going to go there. Okay, I know that. So then when I bring it in, everything is already named and I can kind of run off. So that's interesting to hear that's how your brain works.
And I'm so weird too, because I enjoy seeing you. Would most people, when I do edits that's not my own footage, they're like, what? How did you find that? Like, they shot it and didn't even know that they had it. And I was like, that's kind of where I live. I live in those things that, like, what's going to be the most impactful for this story? And it doesn't matter that you had great shots. Cause this is one thing I do harp on with a lot of the students. Now, finally getting there, is when you shoot as a shooter editor, when you shoot, you can't be married to your best shots, because you could do an edit for the thing that you just did, and you had 9 of your greatest shots ever of your life, and you only used 1. It's okay. You may use that again in another day, or you may never use it. But that's what your reel is for. If you ever want to make a reel one day, that's what those shots are for. But this is your job right now. And it should always be important, because I watch so many videos go out that I like, yep, they put that video, they literally only put that clip in there because they wanted to, because they loved it and they thought it was a good shot, but it had no bearing on the story or anything else that was going on at all, you know? And then it was, plus it was wide as hell. He caught a great catch. Yeah, it was awesome that he caught the catch, but man, it was like, who cares? It did nothing for the video, you know, but it did something for the person that posted it and put it in the video, because it was personal to them, because they felt like they got the shot. Well, use it later. And then usually what happens is that you realize it's not that good of a shot. It was just a really great moment that you captured, just not very well. You know, and the moment was amazing, but what you captured was not. But you mix both of those and put them together. And I see that so much that's out there. I think people should learn to edit things other than their own stuff more often than not. Because you got to learn that your shit isn't the only. Am I allowed to say that?
You can cuss.
Okay.
Absolutely.
My bad.
This is the internet.
Shit does stink. Like, it's okay. Like, it's okay. Like, that's the worst word. Like, I hardly ever curse. Well, I do off camera, but usually on camera, I'm not so much. But it was like, your stuff can stink. And your stuff isn't the best stuff that's out there. Other people are doing just as hard of work as you are, if not harder, you know, and then learn how to find the best shot. This is where I've said before, I will never, ever, ever be a great coach if I was ever to be a coach. Because best player plays, best shot goes. It doesn't matter whether none of them could be a shot that I shot. It doesn't matter, because best plays, period.
Yeah.
I don't care if you've got the $9 million contract and you've got the $250,000 contract. At 250, you're better than 9 million. 9 million, sit your ass on the bench. You know, let's go. Like, that's the way I live with that stuff, because it's so important, because everybody's important in what they do and everybody's got a good shot somewhere.
Well, and I think that speaks to, you know, something that I saw a lot when I was at the University of Minnesota. You know, I was hiring entry-level roles. I was hiring interns. And you get those people who mistake a good play for a good shot, right, on a reel. And, oh, my gosh, the number of, like, amazing touchdown catches I saw were, they're wide, they're out of focus, they're like, you know, this camera's a little askew. It's just, it's such a mistake that I think a lot of entry level, mm-hmm, you know, people in this industry do, is just you mistake a good play for a good shot. And I'm not hiring that wide receiver.
Right.
Like, I don't care that he made the catch. I care how you captured it.
Right.
You really, really have to be careful of that as a young person in the industry. And I think that's a fantastic thing that you just touched on there.
And the one other thing too, that I talk about, of the content, who's the content for? Is it for the creator? Or is it for the consumer? Which the consumer is the recruits, the families, the fans, and even administration. Yeah. I find a lot of things get lost when you make it for yourself. And I think I see a lot of that right now, is there's a lot of it for myself. You know, you go, wow, that was amazing. And this is where I struggle. Like, everybody can get mad at me. It's okay. I understand. I've had people get mad at me before when I say these things. I don't use effects, but it's not because I can't. It's because I choose not to. I like seeing it natural because I think it's about the person. It's the player. And it should be my job to get it the best way that I possibly can, because that player needs to be promoted for being great at what they do. And it's my job to capture it. And then I capture that moment. Then I edit that moment and I put it out, and it makes it about them. It makes it about the university. It makes it about the brand. It makes it about whatever it is that's there. It makes it about that, not about me. But then whenever you go and you watch something from, I don't know, I haven't watched any content from them, say Maine. I'm just making this up. Maine puts out this video and it's got just tons of effects, and there's players, and it was the whole game, and tons and tons and tons and tons of effects. And afterwards, I was just like, man, that effect was amazing. That effect was amazing. Okay, then it's about the person making the effects, and the effect was the purpose of the video, instead of the purpose of the video being for the university, for the brand, for the player, for the recruit, for the parent. You know what I mean? Like, to me, that's where I struggle with it. But there are those that can put it together. Justin Law. I don't know if you guys have had him on or not. Justin Law, he was at Ohio State, is now currently at South Carolina. Absolutely crushes it when it comes to telling a story with video and effects. Like he affects me. Like, I watch his stuff going, wow, like, that's impressive. You know, like, I'm impressed because I know the player. I know what their emotions are. But the effect in a transition of doing something still became important, but it made it a part of the video and the content that was in it, not really about Justin. But Justin's one of those people that I could sit there and watch that stuff, you know. But a lot of people miss things that you see on video boards these days because everybody's on social.
You know, I want to circle back to something that you said earlier when you were talking kind of about your editing process and your Twitch, was that, you know, you really feel an edit when you're in the edit. And I'm curious, you know, one thing that we talk about a lot on this podcast is pre-production and prep and planning. You know, how do you balance that where you're planning, you're preparing, you're thinking through an edit before, and just feeling it out when you're sitting down in, you know, Premiere or whatever your NLE is?
Yeah, I'm always in Premiere for the most part. I will say it depends. Like, if it's like an intro video, it's a different way of doing things. Like, right now we're prepping for men's basketball intro video. So I'm editing the music already. I already have the idea of kind of what I want. I'm going to actually start laying down some of the highlights before we even film anything, so that I know the moments and the places where I need player and content. So whenever I come in and go shoot, I don't just go do the pray and spray moment where we're sitting there shooting. It's like, do this, do that, do this. I mean, I have no idea because I don't know what I need at this moment. Nah, I'm going to have a walking shot here. I'm going to see the basketball there. This is going to be strobed. You know, this moment's going to be with blue lights. This one's going to be with orange lights. This is what we're doing through the fascia, blah, blah, blah. And then prep all that before we ever even shoot it. But for instance, like with men's basketball, like during a season for social, it's such a completely different way. It's more about what's going on. Okay, what did coach say to the team? What's the team feeling right now? Did we just lose a game? What's something that the players are going through right now to humanize what's going on? You know, let's go on their journey. So whenever they take this journey, we're not building up on wins and losses. We're building up on player and coach and staff and, you know, all these other people that are involved, because so many times you see content is all only created for wins. Like, and everything is based on wins. And if you lose, you don't post anything. You stay quiet. You put up a picture. You don't even show the score, blah, 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 blah. Not something that I believe in. Now, again, I know other people do it. Now, for me, I'm going to post when we lose every time. Now, that doesn't happen throughout all sports here at Auburn, but I know when it comes to basketball, which I can control in a lot of ways, in some ways, we're posting. And it could be coach, it could be players, it could be just a shot from the game that explains what it was like and what it felt like, because everybody else is human. Like, these players are human, and they hate to lose way more than any fan could ever expect. Way more.
Yeah, I think that's a misnomer. Like, if you lose, then you hide it.
Why?
Something like that. Because
there's always a story to tell in a loss.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
And a lot of times it's still positive for your team.
Okay, here's an example right now. I am where I am right now because of how many times I lost or failed. You do not learn a single thing in life without failing. So why do you cover up the fact that this is a learning moment in life to be able to do that? And that's what people should, and it's educational, because we live in a world of, look at social media. Social media is false. It's full of lies. It's full of what do you want to call it? It's fake news. Like, because you're seeing someone that says, oh, I'm happy all the time. I'm happy, happy, happy. No, you're not. You're miserable, but you're putting on a face for everybody to show something. You know what? Just be natural, be raw, be authentic. You know, be those ways, and people see through that crap. It stands out. Like, you visually see that and you know it. Like, when we talk about making videos that have audio in it, you see that moment and you're like, wow, I want to know what they're talking about. Go ahead. Then they click on that audio, and then you gave them great audio to hear what they had to say, and then the music to make that power moment even more. Man, you did your job, you know, because you're still going to elevate it because you understand what's going on, and maybe they don't, but you got to be the person that finds that, to get rid of that disconnect, to add context. There we go. We are here to add context to what's going on.
Well, I think your personality has to go into it too. You know, you talk about that social media presence where everything's just positive, positive. Mm-hmm. But as a creative, I think you have to be vulnerable. You have to be open. You have to understand who you are as a person mm-hmm. to be able to create. And I know we've talked about that on this podcast with leadership before, and that, like, you have to have your own personality and leadership. But I think it applies to content too. When you know who you are, and again, like, to your point, you're not creating content for you, mm-hmm. but your personality is going to come through in what you create. Like, that's just, it's nature. It's going to happen. And the more that you know you, and you're willing to be, like, open and vulnerable in that process, and, like, not stress about what everyone else is going to think about your mm-hmm. stuff, like, that is when stuff shines through. And that's something that I've really seen from younger people. And I was terrible at it when I was younger. I didn't know myself very well. I wasn't willing to put myself out there. Mm-hmm. And the more you figure that out as you learn and grow as a creator, like, I mean, that's unbelievable. That's when things change for you. And I feel like, you know, just hearing your story, you know, it feels like maybe you picked that up early on. Do you feel that way?
In some ways, but then also Jack Cook, former student of mine, I just consider him a friend now, worked with me here. He's the one that pushed me to make my first reel. I never made a reel before. You know, he's the one that pushed me to be on Twitch. He's the one that pushed me, like, a student did this. Like, I learned more from him than I ever could have, because he was trying to explain things of way where I thought it as being, no, this is selfish. It's self-centered. It's all these other things. But it's not about me. It's about everybody else. And again, but it is you that's having to do it, and you're having to put in that work. But he explained it to me where I just always thought that stuff was very self-centered. Like, you talk about yourself on Twitch, you talk about yourself on Twitter, who freaking cares? You know what I mean? Like, that's where I always thought about it. But then it was like, no, like, you have something valuable to offer. Like, that's why I'm here. I love it when I sit down with you and watch you edit and do this and do that, you know? And then when I sat down and did my first reel, it was a big eye-opening experience for me, because it showed me about all the things that I did wrong. Because I got to see how much I shot so much of this. Oh my gosh, I need to stop shooting this. I need to shoot more of this. I wish I would have had this, this, and this, because I would have been able to make a better edit. And then I go into the next year going, okay, here's my plan. Now I have something to strive for. I have goals of these are things that I can do to improve myself and to improve the product that we're trying to put out there, because this is what I missed on. And then I go make that reel again, see if I fixed it. Okay, great, I fixed it, but then I sucked at all this other stuff again. All right, now we got to figure, those are things that you just kind of, I found making a reel to be the most enjoyable thing, not to try to get another job, but making a reel to get better, you know, as you know what I mean?
I love this. I mean, how many weeks ago did I suggested the reel was for development purposes primarily, and I think you've hit on something that I think is super important. We've all had times of failure.
Mm-hmm.
I think about development in a way that you have to be willing to do something that you're terrible at to get better. And having kids totally changed all of that for me. Just seeing them
preach,
seeing them learn how to walk. It's like there's so many new things that they have to learn in a short amount of time, right? Mm-hmm. Like months change kids, unlike anything else. And but still,
so does candy,
especially since Halloween was pretty recent. Just having that mentality of understanding that it doesn't matter how old you get, what you're doing, the willingness to fail, and understand that you can still pick yourself up and it's not the end of the world for failing, because as you go, I think the higher up you go, there's a tendency to cut back on risk. And I think what we do, you need to be willing to take risks all the way along the way.
100%. I try, man, I know one of the things, I don't know if it's a good thing I'm known for or not, but it is kind of taking risks or maybe pushing boundaries when I shouldn't, or, you know, whenever someone says, no, you shouldn't do that, I do it anyway. Now, not everything, but there's things that happen that you just, if you believe in it and you believe in it strongly enough, like I have had conversations with coaches, with administration, I bet my job on this. Right now, I'm making this, it's going to work. And I'm willing to accept the fact that I can get fired afterwards because it was just a horrible big bomb and mistake. I am willing to take that. So far, it's been, I'm still here.
You're still employed.
Still employed, you know, but again, you have to understand why you're doing it. It can't just be selfish reasons of why I'm doing it. Like, you feel a moment coming and then you feel the old school mindset of people around you have this one, no, we can never do that. We don't do that because this is, no, you just please trust me. And that's one of the hardest things as a creative, all of us creatives, if you're listening to this, anybody that's young, old, whatever, trust is probably the number one thing you're always looking for in other people that you want from other people. You want other people to trust you so that you can do your job. Because it is suffocating when you know that they're not going to trust what you're doing, and to go into an edit knowing that things are going to change because it has to go through approval. And what's the real point to putting in work when you're never going to be able to put out what you want to anyway, that you feel is right? Because that's why you're there. You're there to be the creative.
Well, Jeff, you know, take me through maybe one of those times that you took a risk. You know, is there one that really stands out to you creatively, a time that you took a risk and it paid off, or, you know, what did that look like for you, you know, in a specific example, if you don't mind sharing?
I will say one of the biggest ones that scared me the most was when I was at Baylor. I went to, I guess I had gone to a, we went to a Fox Sports something to watch the Rangers do something. And I went because I was upset because I had asked to do some uniform videos for Baylor. Baylor, this was the year that Baylor came out with the chrome domes, where they had the gold chrome helmets. They had black uniforms. They had green uniforms. They had white uniforms. They had like every combination imaginable. It was the first time they had ever done anything like that. And I said, we need to make some uniform videos with our players, and we need to do it for every game. And this was before the season started. And they said, absolutely not. We have too many people that are all about tradition and history. And then that's when I laughed, because I said, there's no tradition or history at Baylor. Like, what are you're joking right now about these uniforms? These uniforms have lost more than they have ever won. So why don't we show something new that's never has any losses or wins in them? You know what I mean? So maybe we can get some more wins in these uniforms that are new. And they just weren't having it. So I went to this thing, and, you know, while I was there, I was just always thinking about that. Like, I got to get this done. I went up getting a hold of the equipment manager at Baylor, and I was like, yo, like, can we get all the players, just get a player per uniform, and let's do it, and we're just going to shoot it. Do you got the okay? Yes. I did not have the okay. So we come in and then we sit down. I got the jib set up in the locker room, and I do all these different versions. Lake Seastrunk was there at the time, and I had him do the Heisman pose and all this other stuff because he was going to be on that list, or thought process on that list. At least that's what the fans were thinking. That was the expectation of the season. So why be afraid to hide from that? You know, people seem to go, well, you're boasting if you think you're going to win the Heisman, so you won't win it. Well, he didn't win it. It doesn't really matter, but it still built up excitement, and that's what he was going for. Why lie about it? Again, this is some of my own personal beliefs bleed into overall beliefs, but we did it. And then the video went out, and we did it to, I think it was Imagine Dragons Radioactive, before it was popular, before it became to nauseam for everybody to hear it, you know, and put it out. The lyrics went for exactly what we were trying to say. It's a new age. It's a new dawn. It's all this stuff of, like, you know, you hit those moments where you finally reveal the gold helmet at the end with Lake Seastrunk giving the Heisman pose. And it was like, whoa, you know, we put that video out at the time. It got an unbelievable amount of views. Probably within 10 minutes of going out, my phone rings. At first I was like, oh crap, I'm about to lose my job. But it was Coach Art Briles on the other end. And again, it showed on the thing. It said Art Briles, which everybody had those phones at the time that said what it was. And I pick up the phone. I was like, hello? And he goes, hey, this is Art Briles. I was like, I mean, I saw it on the phone, so I was trying not to laugh. And I was like, hey, Coach. He goes, you make the video? I was like, yeah, Coach. That's big time, baby. I was like, thanks, Coach. And he goes, so can I get that and put that on my Twitter? I was like, yeah, Coach, we can put it on Twitter for you. He goes, all right, well, thanks again. That's big time, baby. And then he hung up. And then the next thing I know, like, I went to go tell my boss's boss that, hey, I need to get this video to Coach. And they're like, what video? Like, they had no idea it had even gone out. And then they're like, oh, you did this? You were so – oh, Coach wants it? Yes. Okay. Now, Jeff, do whatever you want moving forward. I'm not joking. Like, that's what it turned into. And it was because I so strongly believe that we needed to put that out. And for the rest of the season, we had a hype video before every single game, releasing new – before there was all the other stuff that you see now where people are putting stuff with – I mean, I did that forever ago. Now, it's definitely not as good as what they're doing right now at that time. But that was something big. Baylor had never had that before. There was only two schools that had multiple uniforms that – posted stuff, and that was Oregon and Baylor, and they were both green and white, you know, and it was kind of cool. And we had gold domes and they didn't, and that was kind of some of the fun parts of it. So
I think you highlighted on it, it's, you know, a lot of it's about picking your battles, right? And mm-hmm. how strongly and convicted you feel on some things, because of the, you know, you've really got to, especially with administrations, you've really got to feel it out, right? And understand what's a hill worth dying on.
Right.
Right. And you obviously felt so convicted about an idea that it was worth dying on. And mm-hmm. I think that's really important. But, you know, you've also got to have an internal barometer of, like, is this really the hill I'm going to die on? Or is there a different way to do things? So I think everybody runs into, mm-hmm. especially in college athletics, where I know Garrett spent a lot of time, I spent a lot of time, and Justin too, it can be tough sometimes with administrations and the bureaucracy and dealing with different coaches mm-hmm. and different people wanting different things, you know? So, you know, it's really understanding of where do I want to die on this hill and when can you get creative and work around it? I know at Notre Dame, we wanted to do a shot with a bunch of players where they were all in the studio, dark lit, multiple players, and their heads were down, and they individually all lifted their heads up. I actually forget what video it was for. It wasn't even my idea, but they were basically just like, no, you're not getting the players. We're not going to get you any players, right? And that very easily could have just been like, oh, we're done with it. We're not doing it. But, you know, we had people get creative, and we dummied people in, and we tracked some faces, you know, and we got some close-up shots, not in the studio, and then tracked them back in the studio, you know, of players, you know, after for media availability when the players were available, right? So you can have creative solutions mm-hmm. to problems,
and then challenge yourself,
Right, exactly. That's exactly it. You challenge yourself, but then there are times where it's like, no, I know this is a good idea and this is what we need to do, you know, whether that's creatively, whether that's morally, mm-hmm. you know, on a piece, you know, you talked about posting after a loss, you know, things like that. You know, I think picking your battles and understanding what's truly, truly important is important in there.
Yeah. And let me also just say one more thing. All these things that I'm saying, I hope that people don't take them as factuals, as these are the end all and be alls, because I know that I have a tendency to say something and it sounds like this is the only way to do it, or this is how you do it, or you're going to fail. And that's not what I mean at all. I'm passionate and convicted in how I do things, but I'm hoping you glean just out of it what you can do yourself. Because as much as I talk about, hey, yeah, I'm going to do it, you know, as you said, I'm going to go all in on this one project, but I know when to do it and when not to. Yeah, I mean, there has to be big moments. There's so many times that when people don't see a creative thing because they're not creative, that's some things to fight for, because you know that where it's going to work. You've seen some trends. I mean, we all look at stuff all the time. People should be very aware of what's going on and find trends yourself. Don't just look for the trends that are on a piece of paper that say what's going on. Find something that is trending that you know is going on with your group. Because what Ohio State's doing over here has nothing to do with what Auburn's doing over here. And what San Diego, like the Chargers are, sorry, San Diego, LA Chargers are doing over here does not work for Auburn over here. What works for the Portland Trailblazers over here does not work over here. Colorado Rockies does not work. You know what I mean? Like all these things that have amazingness that's going on in their programs still has nothing to do with what we're doing, but there's some pieces that we can take out of that. Because one thing that they all do, they talk to their fan base very well, very well, and have a really great voice with them, which we need to do a better job of.
Well, and I think people kind of get caught up on some of those big name teams, mm-hmm. you know, I think, you know, this wasn't necessarily your point, but you know, I've seen creators at small schools,
Troy,
at, you know, Mercer. the Mac school, a Sunbelt school, yep. at some of the, you know, HBCUs, like uh-huh. there are some incredible people doing incredible things with like
preach
tiny, tiny resources mm-hmm. that like don't get the attention because they're not Ohio State. They don't have this big, you know, fan backing or this big following, but like you can pull inspiration from all over the place if you're willing to look. And I think, like you said, to get caught up in this cookie cutter mentality of like,
yeah.
oh man, the Chargers did this, the Rockies did this, the Seahawks did this.
Awesome. Like, say good yeah. job, you know, and find your own voice. It's okay to be different, but don't be different just to be different, but don't follow a trend. Don't follow that trend specifically just because you want to be like that. Okay, great. Find out why it worked. Why did it work? Does that translate to what you're doing? Everybody's, like I said before, Spielberg, Dutch angle. Well, so if I do a Dutch angle, I'm copying every single time I do it, which is false. It's just, why did they use that Dutch angle and what was that purpose for? And then you use those things. You know, that is, like that's every movie you... Everything's been done.
We just circled back to intention.
Yeah.
Right? What's the intention? And those are a lot of creative arguments.
Right.
And I'll be the first to say, you know, so much of what we do on the creative side is so subjective, right?
Correct.
But I think where that subjectivity ends and where objectivity begins is when I had employees or students who worked for me and wanted critiques on their work, and they would break a rule, right? And I mm-hmm. say rules in quotes, and I know we've talked about this before. But I remember with a colleague one time, not somebody who worked for me, not a student, they had this shot that was a side shot and all you could really see was like the ear, you know, and I was like, okay, this shot doesn't really do it for me personally. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why you did this, because I would never want an ear hole shot. What emotion is being conveyed through the ear, right? But then it was put in the context of the story and it was pointed out to me why it was intentional. And then even though I would have never thought of it or agreed with it, I can respect it on a subjective level of saying I would never do this, but there's intention behind it, mm-hmm. right? Where that flipped for me is when I'd have students or young editors come to me and I'd ask, why did you break 180 here? Why did you put this angle here? And the response is because I think it looked cool, or because that's the only shot I had, mm-hmm. right? That's where, in my opinion, the subjectivity starts and we're going to get real objective, right? If you give me a reason behind it, an emotional, a story-driven reason on why that shot is there, why you broke this rule, why you did this, then I can disagree with it subjectively, but still say, yeah, keep it in. You think it motivates the story this way, or I might make a suggestion about how it motivates a story a different way. We can have a discussion about it. But if you just say, oh, it looks cool, or, oh, it was the only shot I had, you know, that's where the intentionality breaks. And I think we just came full circle from, you know, it's not copying if you're intentional about it.
Right. You know, but you've seen when there's copy, when they intentionally copy.
Sure. There's intentionality and intentionally copying, but there, you know, you can have intentionality to bring out an emotion and copy something. Right.
And I think it's so funny when I watch content, because I do this every Saturday morning and then we do this on stream. We watch what comes out. It's funny if you see something drop on Friday and then you watch videos on Saturday, how many people went, ooh, we got to follow that real quick. And then how everybody basically had the same effect, same kind of thing going on. And a lot of times never lived up to what the original was, because they tried to do it within probably a 6 hour.
With a what?
Yeah. And they didn't really know what to do. They just like, oh, well, we're going to follow a trend real quick. And I just, so frustrating.
Yeah. What's your take on the open door challenge and all of the social content like that? I feel like you're going to have a good take on that.
Well, again, this is all opinion, not factual. Like it's purely opinionated. I thought it was very cool at first, but then it got played out so fast where it was, and that's the one thing I struggle, even though I'm on social all the time. I love the concept of it because it's fun, but it takes all the fun out of it whenever you see it to nauseam and see it done poorly to nauseam. And then it's just like, oh, like, so now we're just going to like, okay, here's the, and when they make it as a challenge, a lot of times it seems to be way more enjoyable to do because it's a challenge. Hey, we did one, you did one, we did one. That's cool. But when it's just those other ones where people are showing something and it overly duplicates it, it's kind of a bit of an issue. But I just, if it's not a part of our brand of what we're doing and we don't do stuff like that, then we just don't do it.
Know your why.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing. I mean, that's every story. Know your why.
And a lot of times when we do stuff, if and when we've ever done stuff like that, it always performs poorly. You know, where, I mean, And I talk about one shots too. Here's one of my biggest things in all of social. Why don't people do more one shots? Currently with men's basketball, we haven't done one single hype video, one single whatever. I mean, we have a following of like 70,000 people with men's basketball on Twitter. Not very many people. All right. But we put out a one shot and 30 something thousand people like it. And there's like 100 something comments, blah, 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 blah. And all these retweets. That's pretty good for just a one shot video that really was nothing special. It was just a static one shot. Get a little bit of emotion, pretty cool. Put that out there because the fans have never seen that player ever before. Now they know his name. They know what to look for. They know he can hit threes. Like all of a sudden they put that together themselves. We didn't have to say anything, but they got all that out of one shot. And then I still think of the two best one shots that have happened in the last year and a half. One of them was the Joe Burrow shot, which was done on a gimbal. Wasn't like the greatest shot of the whole world, but it was an amazing shot. Got a lot of people talking, got like 5.something million views. Second shot was the hurdler from Florida that whenever they did the motion tracking on his head, so it never moved. And he did I don't know if you've seen this or not. If you haven't seen it, you need to go watch it. But the hurdle goes all the way across, his head never moves, and he's going across the hurdle and it's done. It's another one shot, had like 9 million views. You know, and like hundreds of thousands of comments from people that weren't even a part of Florida. Same thing with LSU. Weren't even fans of LSU when they were commenting on it. Those are big moments. And very rarely does an edited piece ever touch something that a one shot could ever do.
At Notre Dame, we did what we called For the Wins. Mm-hmm. And it was a sponsored content series on social that was about, here's our quick, you know, 30-second social piece after we do a big win. And we tried to be as clever as possible about it. And sometimes we get way too clever on our own. But our most popular one, we were sitting there before we played Virginia Tech at Virginia Tech night game. And we were trying to think about what to do if we won that game. You know, sometimes you'd like to take a little jab at the other team, something playful, mm-hmm. something friendly. And we had a entry-level employee just suggest, what if we just had one shot, it was focused on a guitar amplifier, and all it was doing it played the first three notes of Enter Sandman, and then the leprechaun walks by, just see his feet, and he just pulls the plug.
Love
and that's it.
It.
Right? And I was like, oh, I play guitar. I have an amp. So I brought in, we played the guitar. We just did it in our studio. No special lighting, right? Just studio lighting against a black backdrop, just on camera audio and a leprechaun's feet. And it was by far, it just blew up, right? Because people were commenting on it outside of Notre Dame fans. But it, you know, I think as creatives, a lot of times, and I knew I did this when I was working in a more producer creative role, is I tended to overthink things. And I thought sometimes things had to be the most creative, right? Whereas you can have simple concept, high execution. And I say high execution and just, you know, the way you are normally going to execute something. It doesn't have to have multiple camera angles and multiple edits, right? But you can still be valuable and show your value as a creative on a very, very simple, easy to execute, easy to understand idea that sometimes is the most impactful.
And to go along with what you were just saying with those posts, what's amazing is also that copy that can go with it, how creative that also needs to be. And I think a lot of times gets lost, even on my end, because I don't actually do any of the copy, but it's so creative. Like, we had a game where we beat Alabama by a lot. We weren't expected to win. This was like 4 years ago in men's basketball, won that game. And their whole slogan that year was buckle up. Well, all we did for the copy was hashtag unbuckled.
Exactly, right? And it's playful. It's playful.
And it blew up. ESPN put it on the front page. Like, it was awesome, you know? And all it was, and that was because of that, not the video that went with it. It was because we roasted back. Like, they were posting all these things and we did the same thing. And we've done this to Tennessee now for like 3 years straight. So it's been kind of funny.
At Notre Dame, our copy for that was Exit Sandman. That's
it. So again, there's so much more that's to it. And that's the whole thing when you were talking about sometimes simpler is more, and we overthink things, and we do. So we have this player on Auburn's basketball team now that his name is Stretch. And so before game days now, I'm going to do a stretching with Stretch. It's going to be a lot. He's just going to do a simple stretch like they do when they do in warmups to give something simple for content. You know, he had a struggle getting to the country. We're going to do a story on him this year. So these are all the things that we can do to build upon who he is as a person and then be able to have that stretching with Stretch. Like, cause he's a Stretch 4, Stretch 5, you know, but he's also called Stretch. Like, that's just his nickname. Fun stuff. Like, and we were just sitting there and, you know, we probably did 40 GIFs with him doing different types of stretches as well, which is good. But you just take something and run with it and have some fun. And the guy no one knows who he is. So now they're all going to know who he is. And that should be our jobs. You know, if I can't sit, because I hate sit down stories where it's just talking head. This is who I am, blah, 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 blah. You know, for me personally, telling a story, I would rather have the people that are around that person talk about that person than that person talk about themselves. Because what's more important, if you got a great story because other people can talk about that person, then that's your great story about them. And they don't need to talk about it at all, because what they've done, their actions, how they carry themselves, everything have already spoken for themselves.
Yeah. And that's one thing I've really found as a feature producer, you know, kind of doing more of those human interest stories is the less I'm actually using the subject and the piece, a lot of times the better it turns out. Cause to your point,
100.
You know, I don't want to hear the guy talk about himself, what a great football player he is. Like, most people are uncomfortable doing that and aren't going to do it that well. And B, you know, if you're really that good, you're going to have other people in your orbit that are going to hype you up to the point that I don't even need to hear about you
right.
from you.
They're gonna
I can hear
it.
About you
They're
from everyone
say it
else.
Better than what that person could ever say it. Guaranteed.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think that's a really good point and something that gets lost a little bit when I first started doing this was just I wanted to get that guy in because, you know, it's his story, but –
I wish I could do
you
so much more
to.
Of that. I just never get a chance to. It sucks.
It's a blast.
That's just
honesty. I personally love it. No, I hear you.
Well, Jeff, I think this has been unbelievable. I appreciate you coming on. And,
I think we could talk for another hour and a half, you know, if we wanted to. Maybe Jeff might have to be our first returning guest in the future.
Like I told you, I go all over the place, so I screw it up at times.
Oh no, it's perfect. Do you want to let people know where they can find you on the Twitch streams and what you're doing with that stuff?
Sure. I think it's twitch.tv/sportsvid, but it's sportsvid. You just type in sportsvid on Twitch. I'm SportsVid on all the platforms, on Twitter, Instagram. It's SportsVid, Twitch, .tv/SportsVid. You can reach me there. I usually stream every Monday, Wednesday, Saturday. Mondays and Wednesdays are at 8 p.m. Central Time. Saturdays are in the morning, somewhere between 8 and 9:30 a.m. Usually it's always a guest on Wednesdays. Mondays is do editing something. Saturdays are just fun. Usually we watch a lot of food and get hungry and drink coffee and watch other people's content before college game day starts or before the actual game start.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over to the sports creative community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives there. The quickest way to get us to stop this podcast is to not tell anyone about it. So leave us your 5-star rating and don't forget to subscribe so you're the first person to catch each new episode. And remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.